Just a warning, this episode contains adult themes and language.
So here I go again, back down to Morenci. I don't even know what number trip this is for me, but it's still heavily in pursuit of the Skelton family. So repeated phone calls, unanswered, messages.
Police report ahead.
Messages not returned. So, you know, my plan is to knock on some doors and see what happens.
And here we are on a dirt road, which you can probably hear.
In a quarter of a mile, you'll arrive.
This house is listed as, I believe, to a cousin of John Skelton. And I believe that the aunt and uncle and cousins all live kind of on the same, I don't know if it's plot of land, but next door to each other at least, so. Yeah, hi, are you related to John Skelton by chance? Yeah. From your husband? I'm doing a podcast about the Skelton boys, and so far, obviously, it's a lot of Tanya and her family, and I'm trying to tell the whole story and get perspective, not to say on the other side, but basically on the other side, mm-hmm. And, so I was out this way, and I figured I would just drop by and see if anyone's willing to talk.
His aunt lives across the road.
Right there? Oh, okay. Do you know if she's home by chance?
Oh, well, she was. She'll be back in a minute, probably.
Okay.
She probably just ran to town.
Can I talk to you for a couple minutes?
I'm getting ready to leave right now.
Just for, like, 2 minutes?
I ain't got it. I'll get back to work.
All right. Is it okay if I hang out here for a minute?
Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I feel kind of creepy sitting here on this narrow dirt road, kind of off to the side of it, just kind of staking the house out. All right, it looks like the aunt is home. So we're gonna go ahead and try our luck and see what happens. Hello? I'm doing a podcast about the Skelton boys, and basically I'm trying to talk to John's family, which I haven't had much luck with.
Well, I'm not interested.
Well, what I'm trying to do is, because everyone's told Tanya's stories, I'm trying to tell John's family's side of the story.
Now, it always gets screwed around where he's the bad guy, and all he's trying to do is help his boys.
Can you give me 2 minutes?
Yep.
I left the area for a bit, but a short time later returned. A car, one that wasn't around before, was now parked in the driveway next door to the original house that I walked up to. As I moved towards the door, the woman I first spoke to, she quickly gets in front of me.
Just not going to give up, are you?
Unfortunately, it's my job, right?
I know, but you know what? No one wanted to listen to none of us before, and all this shit happened. Now, all of a sudden, everybody wants to listen to Tanya. Hang on, I'll see if she's on. Okay.
She slips inside. I can hear her warning whoever's inside this house.
I'll go running out of here. No, you need to leave.
I'm not trying to harass anyone. I'm just...
You need to leave. If you come back here again, I'm calling the cops.
That's fine.
You need to go.
That's fine. I'm not sure what the animosity is for. I've never done anything to anybody. I'm just asking
because
questions.
When we were going to do this years ago, when it first came out, nobody wanted nothing to do with it.
Right. And I wasn't here at that time. I'm not...
Okay, well, we're not doing this. I have 7 little kids. They don't need to know nothing.
Okay. Okay.
Well, goodbye. Go on your way.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Shattered. That trip to Morenci took place back in September 21st, 2017. It was the last contact I had with any of John's family here in Michigan. I'd done it. I'd exhausted all local Skelton leads. Called every number. Knocked on every door. I chased down every lead I could.
All right, so I'm here in the airport, getting ready to go down to Jacksonville.
This time we look for answers from John's mom, dad, and sister.
So you know
this time we head to Florida.
To activate the flow of oxygen, pull down on the mask until the plastic tubing is fully extended.
mask over your nose and mouth and breathe normally. Secure the mask using the elastic.
Before we get into this, I'm going to ask something of you. Something that will be almost impossible. I want you to forget everything you know about this story.
It was actually John pretending to be a woman named Joanne Taylor.
People don't understand. This is what this man has done in the past.
Could there be any validity to John's story that Tanya was in fact abusive in multiple ways to the children?
There's certainly no information that's involved in this investigation that indicates that whatsoever.
I want you to forget all of that, because before you heard any of it, you had a fresh perspective. Since then, you've heard stories, mostly from one point of view. But today, you'll hear accounts of the exact same events, but it's going to sound much different, and you need to allow yourself to listen without bias. Some of the things you're going to hear will seem outlandish, and they might be just that. But John's family needs to be heard in their own words. I took a day trip to Florida not long ago, hoping to talk to John's mom, Roxanne, dad, William, and sister, Lucinda, who all live in his hometown, Jacksonville. Tanya's family and friends have provided the voices associated with this case, because they're all still located in Morenci. John's family has been relatively quiet, and from what I can tell, that's mainly because those closest to him live about 1,000 miles away. Stepping out of the airport into the Florida heat, which was about 50 degrees warmer than the crisp air I left at Detroit, I try to slow the pace of my racing mind. I'm here. This is really happening. But would it really happen? That was my main concern. What if I made the long journey for nothing? What if they turned me away, and what if it was more of this?
You need to leave. If you come back here again, I'm calling the cops.
They could easily chase me away, and then what? I'm in the rental car now, psyching myself up, just telling myself the worst that could happen is they ask me to go. There are two addresses I'm interested in down here. There's the one being Roxanne and William's home, but after looking at the house on Google Maps, I wonder if it's really an option. They have a fence and a gate blocking the driveway. To enter the property seems really intrusive. The second option is William's gas and diesel repair shop. It's definitely more accessible. But the Google Street View of this property is a bit unsettling. In fact, my wife got a look of it, and she was nervous for me after seeing it. But I convinced myself the shop is where I'll begin.
All right. Just around the corner from William Skelton's place of business. It's a gas and diesel motor shop located here on the outskirts of Jacksonville.
I have to drive past the place because the dirt drive is jam-packed with vehicles. Cars, trucks, vans, some RVs. As I walk into the yard, I see an older man. He's very thin, gray hair. Deep, dark tan. He's got those lines in his face that, you know, the sun provides after years of weathering. When I look at him, I see John Skelton in about 20 to 30 years.
Hello. How you doing? Is William around?
Hey.
Hey, William. Hi. I'm Jeremy Elfman.
I explain the podcast to him. I also tell him why it's important for me to get his story. We work our way over to a small white office building. The lot is dirt, and there are cats darting in between cars. John Sr. smokes a cigar as we find two chairs on the paved walkway leading up to the office door. He explains to me that the family calls the John Skelton that you're all familiar with John Russell, which is his middle name. John Sr. goes by just John. But for the sake of simplicity, we're going to call him Sr. And he starts talking about his distrust of the prison system in Michigan.
Especially their term correctional institution. It's more like a segregation compound, is what we see from down here. And of course, you know, I don't know all the internal things they're doing and how much validity there was to this last thing. I don't know. He spent a few months in solitary type environment because they were doing investigations. Mm.
He gives me a look as if to call BS on the word investigations.
When the whole thing first happened, what were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts? I'd kick him in right in the ass if I could have. He was in the
Senior was upset with his son because of the way he handled the police prior to the boy's disappearance. John Russell went to Chief Weeks and complained about Tanya molesting their sons, but Weeks didn't seem to want to help. That's according to John Senior.
The police chief up there in Morenci offered to put him in jail because he knew of this child molestation was going on by his wife and their sons, because he knew about it. And I think that was an intimidation thing there to shut him up. And I've chewed him out since then because he should have gone to the state police. He should have known better. Just common sense. You know, if you don't get satisfaction at one place, go to another place, but don't tell either place that you was there. And, geez, if I had to do it one time, do it again.
I found some old video of the younger John talking about the claims of abuse falling on deaf ears. This was in a courtroom back in 2011.
I would have done things differently if I felt that the system didn't fail me. If I didn't feel like the people who were supposed to have done something didn't choose friendship over their duty.
It's kind of hard to hear. John says, I would have done things differently if I felt the system didn't fail me. If I didn't feel like the people who were supposed to have done something didn't choose friendship over their duty. John Russell's claim has been that Tanya, the boy's own mother, was sexually abusing them.
I gave her the benefit of the doubt, but me being down here and they up there, you don't know.
Right.
But my son got really concerned about it when he caught him one time and really talked to his mother in depth about it.
So,
while Senior and I sit talking, Lucinda, John's sister, she shows up.
Lucinda Ford, LucindaFord.
Your family, especially the family that I've had a brief interaction with up in Morenci, feels like they've been misrepresented.
Yes,
is that
all do.
Across the board?
Yes,
you all do.
Yes, we all do. No one's listened to us. Everything was just what Chief Weeks and Tanya's family said, and Tanya herself, and the spokesperson that they had there at the beginning. And no one's listened to us. Everything we've said has just been pushed under a rug. It's not been credited at all.
Now, some people are saying, well, the reason that they haven't been listened to is because it seems far-fetched, this story.
Right. It does. It does. I'm not going to deny it.
Yeah. But does it not seem so far-fetched if you know John?
No. It's something that John, if he puts his mind to it, he's pretty determined on doing something. Very smart.
Like, what tipped you off to him, like, growing up with him, that you knew he was that smart?
Just him. He was just a unique little boy growing up.
What's the age difference?
There's 11 months between us.
He's older?
I'm not the oldest.
Oh, you're the oldest?
Yes,
oh, okay.
Yes, I'm the oldest.
All right, so growing up with John, what was that like?
Rough. He wanted to be the brains and I had to be the brawl. So
really?
Yes, I was the tough one. He was the one that wanted to read books and do nothing else but be a nerd. Me, I wanted to fight and get in trouble.
So he would.
We switched gears and started talking about Tanya.
No.
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 Okay, well that's...
My feelings have never been a secret. I don't believe a child molester will ever change, and she was one before she had children with my brother, and she's probably still doing it.
I called the authorities to find out about the legality and the proof of her inappropriate actions with her boys.
That's Roxanne, John's mom.
A lot of things came up missing.
She also doesn't have much faith in the police up in Michigan. She's convinced the police and Tanya have some kind of secret understanding. She also believes that Tanya was abusing the boys.
You know, don't tell me that I'm a fool. I'm far from it.
Yeah, I mean, so you totally believe that Tanya was definitely doing something to those children?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, like, what I'm getting from you guys is a lot... There's a lot that's not being put out in the public about Tanya.
Correct.
I was real concerned with John. And all the games Tanya played, I was very worried. When he'd call me and he'd be crying and he'd say, Mom, she tells me to come visit her on Monday night. I have to leave before the boys wake up for school. But we have sex, and then the next day she tells me she's taken the boys away, you know, and things like that. She just played games. I mean,
and when use the boys as leverage?
Yeah, Exactly, because she knew that the boys meant a lot to John. And so they were an easy target.
And just to be 1,000% clear, you can't imagine John ever hurting his children.
Never. Never in a million years. And I would give you my life if that was any different.
We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Senior says he's sure that his son didn't hurt the boys. He even alleges that one night...
It was a few years back. I was filling... Down here in Jacksonville, I was filling up one of my other truck with fuel. And I was had my back there, and a gentleman come up behind me, and he asked me not to turn around and said, I know of your plight. I know your sons are okay.
Really?
And I says, thank you.
Just to be clear, what Senior's saying is that someone showed up down in Jacksonville and instructed him not to turn around and proceeded to inform him that his grandkids were alive and safe. Senior is corroborating his son's story that Tanner, Andrew, and Alexander are with an underground group, safe and sound.
That was it.
He didn't turn around. I know that you're being guarded on some of this stuff, right?
Yes.
Yeah? I mean, you feel like you have an obligation to make sure that John's plan goes through or that those kids remain where they are.
Yeah, and until they become of legal age and when they come out, and then the, as Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story comes out.
And that's when it will come out?
Yes.
So the boys, when they become legal, when all of them become legal, or when the oldest one becomes legal? Not really sure yet?
Not really sure yet.
Do you know if, like, the plan is to have, will the organization reach out to you guys and let you know, or how does that work?
I made that request when this, you know, first started going. That I'd like to be contacted. I'd like to arrange a point where we could see the boys when it came time for turnover. They could be put in a hotel room, and those who were with them could be should be gone locally out, still spying, still they're looking at everything. We'd go in, talk to them, record things if we could. And go from there. I wanted to protect that party that had them just as much.
A lot of people think the story of John giving the kids away and them being hidden away for this long seems stranger than fiction. If I'm being honest, I'm one of those people. Even Lucinda says it's a hard pill to swallow.
Seems far-fetched, this story.
Right. It does. It does. I'm not going to deny it.
Yeah. The people that are going to question all this and say, well, there's no way that there's a group that can do this and... that's impossible that like these kids haven't found the internet or a phone or something like that. What do you say to those kind of...
Well, I've thought about that, to be very honest with you, because when I went on TV and pleaded for my grandsons, and I said, Andrew, Alex, you both know how to use a phone. You know my phone number, you know your mom's. Give a call. Drop them off somewhere, a police station, a McDonald's for health, you know, but you know a number. But then I got to thinking, I questioned that too. Why hasn't them boys, did anybody ever think maybe they're happy where they're at? I don't know, but maybe it's a better life than they were encountering.
I never thought about that. Thought about it that way.
I didn't either until one day I was just thinking about it. Because, I mean, you know, my boys are old enough to be on the internet, to be have a telephone, to have a cell phone. And it pops in my head all the time. Why haven't they contacted somebody?
Right.
Maybe they're happy.
Maybe. But before Andrew, Alexander, and Tanner went missing, many people believe that John was not happy.
Some people have said that he was a little bit depressed at the time, and I don't know if you remember back then, if you got that feeling from him.
If he wasn't, he should have been from, you know, if he got the kind of results that I understood he'd have got, you know, from, like, you know, from the chief of police up there.
Right. And that, this is all kind of happening right around that time, then, you're saying?
Yeah.
This was really...
That, you know, when I look at the big story from this end, somebody had to cover their butt somehow, and they broke out a brand new railroad system, and he was the first passenger, and he got railroaded.
The FBI, when he was in Ohio, interrogated John, of course.
When he was in the hospital?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he was under psychiatric and everything, and they were interrogating. John had asked for his lawyer, and they ignored that, and it kept on and on and on. I've got the paperwork of the transcript of that.
I asked to see those papers, and Roxanne said that they weren't easily accessible.
And my son was to the point, they didn't let him sleep, they didn't let him bathe, they didn't let him do nothing. He called me, he said, Mom.
Hold on 1 second, I'm so sorry.
The camera overheated here, but it cooled down just a moment later. Roxanne continues her story. So John calls his mom.
And he told me he had urinated on himself and all this stuff. And it upset me very much. And I told my husband, I said, John, I've got to go up there. They were treating him so bad. So bad.
Does he feel like he's being treated fairly in the prison system? No.
No, he's not.
Can you speak more specifically to what he doesn't like?
There was no reason to be in segregation for 4 years.
So as I'm talking to the family, I find out that John is out of segregation. They tell me they can now call John on the phone.
You don't put someone in segregation for 4 years, and the excuse they keep giving it, oh, it's an ongoing case. It's an ongoing case.
There was a moment, and I should say there were many moments, that struck me. Moments when I had to consciously tell myself to keep it together. Things were said that shook me, and one in particular took me back to a concept that I'd heard many, many times before. This is Tanya talking about John.
If he's continued to play the selfish, haha, I won, because I know and you don't, I don't know if I'll ever know in this lifetime.
Now here's lead investigator Jeremy Brewer.
You have three boys who were the victims of his selfish attitude and his narcissism.
And now here's John's father.
I'm 100% confident that the course we took is well planned.
You're 100% confident that your son is telling the truth?
Yes.
And I think that's the important thing in all this is... I think everyone's waiting to find out if John's telling the truth, right?
Of course they are.
Yeah.
And then it's going to, who's going to get the last laugh?
Crazy, right?
He said to tell you that his boys are safe and sound.
That was Roxanne in 2010. And here's what she says now. This is 7 years later.
His kids are fine. I know this as a grandmother. I have a grandmother's heart, and I know this. I don't know where they are. If I did, they wouldn't be there. But...
Right. Because that's what I was telling Lucinda. I said, well, even, like, if the story's true with John, because I don't know.
Yeah.
If the story's true...
I don't know.
Right. Well, they say it's 100%. Do you feel 100% that John gave the kids to somebody?
Yes.
You do believe that?
Yes.
And you believe that those kids are safe with
yes.
whoever that group is?
Yes. And I think when those kids are of age, those kids will come out of wherever they are, and they'll either seek me or they'll seek their father.
Not asking who these people are, but have you had communication with these people?
I have not.
No.
I wish I had.
Because you said things would be different. You would...
If you did, you would have
gone and got the kids.
Exactly.
Regardless of what happened with Tanya, this may not have been the best way to handle it, giving the kids to somebody else. That's the perspective of many people saying maybe there's a better
way. I agree.
Yes.
I agree 100%. What my son did was irresponsible and stupid.
I asked Roxanne about the interview she did back in 2010 when she said the boys were fine. I wondered what made her so sure.
All he told us was that the boys were fine, that they will grow up to be good men. They were fine for me not to worry about them boys. So that's all he told me. Now, John, because we didn't have dual phones, mm-hmm. I don't know what he told
John. Right, you couldn't hear that, right?
No.
So you believe that to this day, those boys are fine?
I believe those boys are fine.
You believe that, or do you want to believe that?
No, I believe it. I believe it full in my heart. I believe it totally, 100%, that them boys are fine.
Do you feel like your son has had part of his life stolen? Because he was trying to do the right thing?
Yes. I do. I think he feels that she took everything from him, including his dignity and the life of the love of his life, which was his boys, because he had to protect them. He can't be with them either. So it took them, you know, nobody won.
Right. What would you give right now to be able to hug and hold those boys, though?
There ain't a time that I don't think of them boys, especially December the 1st of every year. I put my Christmas tree up on that day, and the last thing those boys gave me was 3 ornaments. One's green, one's red, and one's blue, and they've got their handprints on them that they made snowmen out of. And you know, it's funny, because when we discovered 7 years ago when the incident happened, my daughter and I went to Black Friday. And I thought, you know, this year I'm going to put my tree up early. I never put it up before December the 1st ever in all the years that I've been married. Mm-hmm. I put it up, and I got a call from my sister-in-law saying that my grandsons were gone and my son, you know, all this happened. I hit the floor because I couldn't believe this. I couldn't believe what was happening. And I was putting the ornaments on my tree. And I swore never again would my tree ever go up before December the 1st. And they're the first ornaments that go on my tree every year.
I know I asked you all to forget. I tried to. But when I got to Jacksonville, I thought, I'm going to talk with the villain's parents. But as I sit here, I see a grandmother. I see a human being who has been lied to by someone. I see a mother whose heart has been broken.
Where are you now, emotionally?
Well, I think where I am is I accept that my son's put away. I talk to him every week. Now, he's been in segregation, so he couldn't. But I talk to him, and the last thing I say to my son is, remember who you are, where you came from, and what you're all about. And I let him know I love him. I don't support what my son did, because that, to me, being a mother, that's just, I have a hard time with that. But I understand emotionally how somebody could do it, you know.
That makes sense too.
Yeah, because I would protect my children under all circumstances. Even my kids now being in their 40s, I'm going to protect my children. Mm-hmm. That's just the way I'm made.
A picture was painted early in this process. A picture of a family fractured and less than whole. The skeletons were supposed to be scary and angry. They were supposed to be detached and uninterested. The picture I was sold, intentionally or not, was of a group of people who didn't seem to care.
I have my time. The holidays, their birthdays, I have a real hard time. But I work through it and say, they'll be back. They'll come see me and I'll know that they're okay. I know that they're okay. Sometimes at the holidays, I think, are they having Christmas? What'd they get for Christmas today? Because the hardest thing I ever did was the year that they went away, having to take back all the presents I had bought that Black Friday. So I have a hard time sometimes, but overall, I've accepted it.
Yeah.
And I have to accept it to survive it.
If we're looking at a victim in this, of the people that are still around, that we see every day, I mean, is there a victim, or is it just the boys that were victims in a kind of a messed up household for a little while?
I think the boys are the victim. It's been hard for us. We've got a lot of rash and a lot of terrible things. But my son created this. My son has to pay the price of it. And that, whether it's right or wrong, he's responsible. He has to take the responsibility and do what needs to be done. So I think only the boys are the victims, because they're protected, but they're missing out on two grandparents that love them and an aunt. And a daddy that loves them dearly. And I'm sure Tanya loves them too. I mean, you know, everyone's a victim, I guess, in one way or the other.
On the next episode of Shattered.
Good evening to you tonight from Morenci, where we have been able to confirm those remains found earlier in Missoula, Montana, are now being analyzed. They're being analyzed by experts at the University of North Texas in Denton. Someone in Missoula, Montana, found a box of bone fragments in a storage shed. Experts in Montana then determined the bones belonged to three children between the ages of 2 and 10 years old. DNA testing now underway to find some answers.
If you have any information about the case, please call Lieutenant Detective Jeremy Brewer at
517-636-0689, and that's right into my desk phone.
If you'd like to see more, go to shatteredpodcast.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook by searching Shattered Podcast.